rockabilly on. Ring Macca. Australia's waiting for you.
Yeah, the weather's always with us, as we know. Good morning and welcome to the program. Lovely why I live where I live. I always love what people say about where they live. And we'll take you to Thailand this morning and into the Mitchell Plateau, amongst other places. 1300 700 222, that's our number. Love to talk to you wherever you are.
Want a hand, mate? Ring Macca. Someone will give it a go.
Oh, g'day, Macca. It's Jenny calling from, well, I'm on the freeway between Warragul and Torquay at the moment.
G'day,
and
Jen.
I'm not driving.
All right.
This must be the most Aussie show on radio. It's such a pleasure to hear you.
Oh, thank you. That's good. It's a pleasure to hear the people who are on the program, Jen.
I rang in because of the guys who were talking about the veterans coming back from the wars and the young fellas being in trouble. I do this work with horses that is just amazing. When people are within 50 metres of a relaxed horse, their blood pressure drops, their breathing slows down, their heart rate starts evening out, and it's all the physiological symptoms of meditation, just simply by being within the 50 metres of a relaxed horse. They've got this enormous heart field.
There you go. They've got this enormous heart field. That was Jen last week. I'll play a little bit more of Jen in a minute, but it reminded me of my friend from years ago in Melbourne, Sid. And he said to me, if a man hasn't had the love of a woman and a lovely dog and a great horse, he hasn't lived. That means not all of us have got the opportunity to have a horse for a pet, but to be around one is the next best thing. And if you pat a horse, I don't know, and feeding it a carrot or an apple or something like that, or even a bit of grass that you pull up from down near the post, it's a wonderful thing. But Jen had more to say about the love of a horse.
You know, anybody who's got PTSD or depression or anxiety or stuff like that should look around. There's, you know, it's become a thing these days. There's a lot of people out there working with horses.
Yeah, and when you're around a horse and there's some horse manure around, and it's very real. It's not virtual at all. You can smell the horse and you can hear him snort and you can feel his breath, and they're really important things. It's like pulling a weed out or whatever, you know, it's just those sort of things. I think they're more important than ever. You know, we keep saying that, but the real world is the thing that'll help you along.
The words you just said, you know, that you can smell their smell and feel their breath.
And tread in their horse manure, yeah.
Tread in their horse manure and the smell of the horse manure. I love the smell of horse manure. I must be crazy.
No, it's just different and it's new and causes you to think, you know, causes you to think. You get involved in your own little world and then all of a sudden you're treading horse manure or you can smell it or, yeah, I love the when a horse breathes and you can feel the hot breath on your hand and you look in their eyes. Oh, I love it. Jenny, thanks for your call this morning.
You're welcome. Have a wonderful day.
Nice to talk to you. And more people, you know, when you travel around Australia, have got horses because I suppose they're country people, but a few city people would and they can travel. But you see all the horse transports and stuff all over the place. And you go past Tamworth where that horse area is and, my God, horses are as strong as, well, not as ever they were. You don't see them in the city streets like you used to back in the 1900s, but lovely things, horses. And speaking of beetroot, which we were speaking of canned beetroot, Christian Lewis says, Ian, I live at Rosedale in Queensland. The area is rich with fruit and veggies and cane. I buy local beetroot and make my own. Water, vinegar, sugar and salt, boil it up and non-biased, but it's the best and cheapest beetroot in Queensland. Have a go. It's easy and I love to support local farmers, says Christian. So he just goes and buys some beetroot at the local shop, wherever. And he makes his own with water, vinegar, sugar and salt. Sounds lovely. And it's probably, always best if you make it yourself. And you get used to it after a while, don't you? You make several batches and after a little while, a few goes, you get the drip and you can make it as salty or as sugary or as bland as you want, can't you? That's the beauty. It's like having a drink, you know. You can, if you have a brandy and dry or something, you can just have a little bit of brandy and a whole lot of dry, or you can have a bit more brandy. But, yeah, you can make your own arrangements and make it however you like. You remember our theme from years ago?
Ooh, it's cold this morning for Nancy's chooks. They're walking dogs, they're writing books as Trevor stacks his bottles by the roadside. On you, Trev. In Toorak, T.I., Tumbarumba, at the Lodge and Yarralumla. They might be listening to Macca on a Sunday morning.
That was a tribute to Trevor all those years ago, and he told me that he'd talked to me before. I don't really remember. I remember talking to people about Trevor because they said, oh, we've seen these bottles by the roadside and this rubbish stacked up, and Trevor was the culprit. He rang last week, if you missed it. You're Trevor.
That's me. Yeah, Trevor. I'm waiting to go to church. A guy picks me up. I go to church at Gilwean Baptist, but I'm living in Darwin, more or less, on and off. Accommodation's a bit hard, but I'm making sculptures out of my rubbish. So I do that, and I do songs, and then, yeah, I've been in and out of jail. They declared me the first vexatious litigant in Northern Territory because I used to take court cases and stuff. And
do you still pick up rubbish, Trevor?
Yeah, I still do that. I really enjoy it. I get a kick out of it. I think, you know, you got to care about things and lift people up and make them feel good about themselves and stuff. And if you do that and people see it, sort of, people come up. A lot of people support me. Like when you first got me on the show, there was all these people driving down from Darwin. I was on the highway up near Dunedoo. And a lady took me in on their farm, and I lived on their farm. That was because of the show. People were stopping off in their caravans going, hey, you're on the radio. I didn't even know I was on the radio. And then these people would stop off, and they'd give me food and coffee, and I was talking to them. And I met thousands and thousands of people, you know, because of your show, but also just people seeing things. They see these piles on the side of the road, and they'd come, and it overwhelmed me after a while. You know, it's not like I can't. I only reckon you'd pick up about a tenth of a tenth of a tenth of whatever it is. Like, it's, I worked out this, like Palmerston to Darwin. I mean, even if you said there was like 10,000 people coming in every morning, say, and one person in 10 threw one can out, 1,000 cans every day. So that's 7,000 cans of one person in 10 throwing out rubbish. That's 7,000 cans.
And you see it everywhere. There's a little place to stop. People stop and think, oh, we can get rid of all the crap out of our car, or they go to the toilet. I mean, it's disgusting, Trevor. Can I just say thank you for doing what you do? And we're coming to Darwin this year, and we'll catch up, okay?
Thanks a lot, Ian. Yeah, God bless. Thanks very much, man. Nice. Yeah, thanks for all the support over the years.
That's
God
a
bless.
Pleasure, mate.
Hello, Macca. It's Phil from Barrera. How are you?
Phil, I'm not bad. Yeah. What's happening?
That's the way. I just thought I'd ring.
Are you walking or something?
Yes, Macca, I'm with my good mate Bernie, and we're just heading down into the Barrera Valley.
Mm.
And you talk about humidity. That mist is filled up. You can't see the river. So it looks beautiful. We're very fortunate.
Yeah, well, it sort of looked like a fog, but it's not a fog. Well, I suppose a fog is humidity, isn't it, and water. But it just seemed to have a different feel and texture about it. Very, very sticky.
It certainly is that, Macca. But the reason I was just putting a call in, I know you love your music, and I just thought I'd share with you that I had the very good fortune to go to Wyong Art House on Thursday night and see Glenn Shorrock and Brian Cadd.
Oh, right, yep.
They were just amazing. Very uplifting, Macca. They were just sensational. I couldn't believe Glenn Shorrock and still holding those notes. And you know, Brian Cadd jumping around like he's 21 or so, he thinks, you know, and just absolutely, truly sensational.
I thought you were going to tell me you went to see Taylor Swift, but no.
Not quite, Macca. I can't afford those.
So did they have a big band with them, or?
They did. They had a wonderful band, and the camaraderie between those two boys is something, you know, they're calling themselves the Elderly Brothers now, and, you know, the banter all night between those two was, to be quite honest with you, Macca, that was more uplifting than the music. It was just lovely to see them both. And Brian, I just couldn't believe he could play those keyboards with a blindfold, you know.
Yeah.
And the band that they had were truly incredible, Macca. It was just a lovely, lovely evening. And to go up there and get out of there at 20 past 10 and be home before 11 was even better, Macca. It's a beautiful little venue. It's a very, very nice venue.
What's it called?
Only about
again?
500. The Wyong Art House.
Uh-huh.
And it's we just went across the road to the Wyong RSL and had dinner before that. But I just couldn't believe the band. Couldn't believe Glenn Shorrock. And I couldn't believe Brian Cadd, they're as good as ever. They're just incredible, Macca.
Yeah.
It's a very lovely thing to go and see.
I heard Glenn Shorrock talking a little while ago, I'm not sure, you know, a month or five ago, and he said he still plays because he said, well, my pipes are still okay, so I can still sing, so why not?
Well, he belted out Cool Change and he held the end of reminiscing. He's holding those notes. I couldn't tell you how long he was holding them, but that was as good as ever. As good as ever.
Great song written by his nemesis in Little River Band. What's his name?
Graham Gables.
Graham Gables. Yeah. Those two didn't hit it off. Completely different, opposite sorts of people.
Well, he's very, he gives him full credit for the song. That's
oh,
for sure.
Yeah. Well, he's a great arranger, Graham Gable. He's a great arranger. Everything had to be, you know, and that song's one of the, I don't know, top, it made the Hall of Fame, the song. But Gable said that his best song he wrote was the one he wrote for listen to this bloke puffing, ladies and gentlemen. The best song.
Sorry, Macca.
The best song he wrote.
My mate Bernie's got the pace going, Bern.
Well, slow down, Bern, all right?
Yeah, slow down, Bern.
he reckoned the best song, Graham Gable said the best song he wrote, and he even was more effusive than that, was the one he wrote for Johnny Farnham called Burn For You.
That's a powerful song, Macca, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll say. But anyway, yeah, I would like to see Glenn Shorrock and Brian Cadd sometime. I know they're still playing around the place. Listen to this bloke. How often do you do this?
Well, Bernie and I try to do this each Sunday, Macca.
Well, about doing it every day till you get a bit of fitness? Oh. My God.
Oh, well, actually, yeah. We are doing a bit more than this, but this is our Sunday walk down to Barara Ferry and back out. So, yeah, it's a decent walk in itself, Macca.
Good on you, Phil.
Okay, lovely to talk to you again. Thank you so much.
Good on you, mate.
Oh, hello, Macca. It's Ross calling from Canberra.
Hi, Ross. How's things in Canberra?
Another hot day here, Macca. Mm. Second day of the ACT Rowing Championships. Yesterday we had schoolboys and schoolgirls from along the east coast, from Newcastle, from Sydney, we had about five or six schools,
wow.
Barker and Cranbrook and Redlands. And we have our visitors up from Gippsland in Victoria, Gippsland Grammar. They have a long haul to bring their boats up, but a great day, 115 races.
On what on Burley Griffin, is it? Or
on Lake Burley Griffin, yes, down at Western Park. That's our race course here. And it was just great to see the atmosphere there of all of the parents and family watching, and a great day of racing. And today we've got the ACT Head of the River, which is our local regatta. But all of these are, you know, building into the Australian Rowing Championships, which comes up in March.
Oh,
and
wow. Where are they? Where are they at?
Look, I'm sorry, I can't tell you right now, but March is usually when we have our Australian Rowing Championships. But,
are they always at Penrith for the Olympic place, or are they?
Oh, no.
They have them each year at different places?
Different places. So there'll be Lake Barrington in Tasmania or Western Australia or
God's Rowing Field.
Absolutely.
That's what they call it, yeah. And Ross, you are?
I'm just one of the umpires on water, and we make sure that we've got good fare conditions for all of the rowers, and safety is a big concern.
Yeah.
And making sure that we run our regattas on time. That's what it's all about.
And it's on again today?
It is. It's the ACT Head of the River today. So, yeah, so opens right the way through to Masters. It'll be another day, a long day. We've got some 70, 80 races again today.
Well, good luck, Ross, and thanks for doing what you do. Good on you, mate.
That's a pleasure. All the best.
See you, mate. Colin's in Wagga. Morning, Colin.
Good morning, Macca. How are you today?
I'm fabulous. Well, I've got to say that. Go on. How are you?
Yeah, well, Macca. Macca, my name's Colin Neal, and I'm formerly from Hungary, and I've moved to Wagga Wagga, and I actually led the motorbikes across the Wheath Alley a couple of years ago.
Ungari, that's a
Ungari, Becca.
I know, no, but I spoke to this lady and she was from England, Ungari, and she called it Ungari, something like that. But anyway,
she's beautiful.
Pronunciation is Ungari.
Ungari, yeah.
All right, What's on your mind, Colin?
Well, Becca, I just thought you'd be interested. We've started paying fishing licenses again in New South Wales some time ago, and I was lucky to have take part. I didn't do anything. I really, I'm a bit busted up, but had a car accident. But we put 8,000 yellow belly into the Murrumbidgee River yesterday, and it was quite spectacular. We went to a fishery and picked up the fingerlings. And we took them down and you acclimatise them to the water. You put them in plastic bags and, and we released them where we could. It's interesting that the state government's actually doing a 2-for-1. So, again, Maine Fishing Club, they put in $1,000. I think the Collingully Fishing Club put in $500. And Rules Club Fishos, which I'm part of, put in $250. And the state government matched that money 2-for-1. So we're able to put in 8,000 fingerlings. I just thought you might find it interesting.
Well, I do. I mean, I always find those sort of things wonderful. And when you say you acclimatise them, the water they came out of at the hatchery is probably a lot different, is it, to the river? You know, because I suppose it'd still be a bit of mud in the Murrumbidgee at the moment. It's flowing pretty well.
Yes, it's running quite well. Yeah, that's right. And before you release them, you put them in bags and put them in the river. So the water they're actually in a big plastic bag.
Same temp.
And it's just not such a shock to them. But how many of them live, nobody knows. But normally it's best if you can put them into a billabong or a lagoon.
Yeah.
So that they're not fighting currents and such. But it was quite a moving little thing, I thought. And
And Colin, tell me a couple of things. What do yellow belly like to eat?
They're pretty good. Depends how you cook them. And actually, best off, we mainly catch them release, but you're best off if you can get them into a cold slurry straight away. Any fish you catch, and it stops all the can't think of the word, but mixing in with the bloodstream, and they're beautiful. Cook well, it's lovely, Mackie. You love it.
And what happened to you with your car accident? What did you do? What happened there?
I stuffed up, Mackie. I looked to the right. I'm actually a motorbike rider. I love motorbikes, and I looked to the right and never seen a vehicle. And
Were you on your motorbike? Were you?
No, thank heavens, no, I'd be dead.
motorbikes, a mate of mine went flying through the air because a car turned in front of him. He didn't, and imagine flying through the air. He was doing 60 and turned in front of him, hit the car and, whoa, away he went and hit the ground, you know. Internal injuries, broken collarbones, broken arms, broken legs, God help me.
And that's a downside, Macca, but I've been flying for deer a few times during my life and once off a horse. And it's interesting, like I was a farmer, but you spoke before about horses and the power. The horses my father used to plough with, they actually, I read somewhere, they're rated at 10.5 horsepower, and that works on towing a certain weight over a certain distance. So, a horse is quite strong, really.
They're lovely things. She was talking about their force field, and if you're within 50 metres of a horse, has good karma.
I use them for stock work and that, and I just love them. And but, Macca, look, I do a bit of blacksmithing. Next time you're down in Wagga, pop in, we'll fire the forge up, and you can make a couple of poppies for Remembrance Day, if you like.
Well, look what I got here. This bloke, I'll mention him. What's his name? Is it Mick Hawley? Is it Mick Hawley? And he makes these condomine bells.
Condomine bells,
Lovely stuff. He sent me one of his condomine bells. And I suppose you make them in all sorts of sizes, but they're just a lovely thing. And the sound, I've got a lovely poem about Condamine bells, the sound, you know, in a silent bush at night, and you'll hear a, just hear that sort of, you know, just echoing through the bush, and there's not many out there. There might be a lone horse or a cattle, usually on a horse, but sometimes on the cattle too, to know where they are, and there you go.
Yeah, now they used to hobble them, and you could hear a Condamine bell for a couple of miles.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Know, still, but yeah, but you can make a bell if you want. I can also do that.
Good on you, Colin. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you, Macca.
Thanks, mate.
Macca, can I say good day to Ada? I met her at Peak Hill on the motorbike trip, and she's got written on the back of her little van, sponsored by Centrelink.
There you go. Good on you, Colin.
Bye-bye.
See ya. Dwight's in Germany. Morning, Dwight.
Hi, Macca. How are you? I don't know if you remember me. We met at when you were in Tamworth.
Oh, yeah. You were with your mum.
That's right. That's right. And mum is listening right now, and so is my wife, and she's just down the road here in Cologne as well. Now, the reason I'm calling, I wanted to thank you so very much for putting a series of events in place that ended up topping off our holiday. After we spoke to you, the deputy mayor of Tamworth, Judy Coates, approached me and said, look, you talked about that film you made about Skylab. Is there any chance you can get in contact with the Astronomy and Space Centre here in Tamworth? So we called them up, and then they agreed to show the film. And we made this huge event, which the people at Tamworth just got right behind us. I can't thank Gary Coppers enough at the Astronomy Centre, and Judy Coates just went out of her way. And I owe it all to you.
Oh, well, it's no problem. That's what we do here. We just put people in touch with one another, which is really good. You, you gave me a copy of it, didn't you?
But that's right. That's right. And I'm supposed to actually give you a weather report here from Germany. I can tell you, keeping the language as clean as possible, it's very cold.
Freezing, very cold. It's very warm in Australia, most places. If it's not, we've had fires and lots of rain and a bit of a cyclone. It's very humid and very hot in places. So I suppose that's only right, isn't it? When it's cold in the north, it's warm in the south, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, but no, it's I've still got jet lag. I'm surviving on coffee today, like there is no tomorrow. And I thought, oh, hang on, obviously as well as the time difference, you know, it's Saturday evening for us here. It's early in the morning, Sunday for you. And I thought I'd better remember to call to thank you.
Well, thanks very much, mate. That was a nice morning in Tamworth, and you gave me a copy of your Skylab thing, which I've got, but I haven't looked at it yet because I've been tearing around ever since. Once you get back to work, everything takes second place, but I'll have a look at it soon. So where did they show that? At the Observatory of Tamworth?
That's right, yeah. They were raving about you as well. They said you came to visit them. They had nothing but good things to say about you. I would love if every single place like that in Australia could show the film. It would be just fantastic because it was such a beautiful evening.
Our running correspondent is on the line, Annie Boyd. Good morning, Annie.
Oh, good morning, Macca. It's been a while since we had a catch-up. I thought I'd bring you up to date with the running story.
What are you
about
doing?
7 years.
You're out pounding the pavement now?
Yeah, out in Centennial. Beautiful Centennial Park. So bloody humid, it's like running in a sauna. But
it is.
There you go.
Amazing. And what are you training for this time? What one?
Tokyo Marathon coming up in just over a week.
Oh, really?
Macca. Yeah. Sunday fortnight. Yep,
And
after that'll be my fourth star. I don't know if you remember, when I called in originally about 7 years ago, I had just retired at the age of 70 and had made my top of my retirement bucket list to run the world's 6 major marathons before I turned 80.
Uh-huh.
Got three in, London, New York and Boston, but COVID came along, which kind of knocked things out of the ballpark a bit. And so now I'm trying to get the other three before I turn 80. 78th birthday, not long off. So I've got two this year, Tokyo coming up and Chicago at the end of the year. and in between Gold Coast and Sydney. So busy running year.
Yeah, I'll say, last time the Sydney Marathon was on, I got booked because all the roads were blocked. I couldn't get back here. So I'm going to court in a couple of months to plead my case. Annie, you keep in touch and ring us from Tokyo. Yeah. So that's 2 weeks' time, is it?
Yep, 2 weeks' time. Yep.
All right. Yep. Well, good luck.
Thanks, Macca. Yep, good.
We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, mate.
See ya.
All the best.
Hi, Macca. It's Kevin Butler.
Oh, g'day, Kevin. I always talk to you when there's a disaster.
Becoming a disaster person. Yeah, Macca, I heard you on radio before talking on Australia All Over about the fires in the west of Victoria after that dreadful day on last Tuesday where the wind came howling through. And I was shifting sheep at the time, and I've never seen a mob of sheep huddle around like a mob of yaks to shelter from the wind. It was just horrendous. But at that time, fires were getting going over a place near the Halls Gap at Pomonal and Dadswell's Bridge. And the first report we heard, there were 5 houses gone, and then 25, and I think there's 40 gone now. So I was looking at ABC News there, and there was a lady with a child in arms, and devastated. And then another young fellow who was crying. And look, Macca, as farmers, we battle. I gave away sheep in the pseudo El Nino that was going to come and lost a lot. And then I had sheep stolen a year and a half before. And that's devastating. But to lose, your home and to lose, your stock and your fencing, and it's just horrific. And I think we all need to do something. I had an MP called Emma ring me yesterday from the Grampians, and I don't know her other name, but gosh, she's a good woman. She organised the Halls Gap Recreation Reserve so blazeaters can come in, lend these people a hand. Peter Jackman, the CFA fire captain over there, I think it's the Dadswell's Bridge, he facilitated and got things going as well, because there's a lot of work behind the scenes where good people do great things so others can recover. And they say they'll recover, but by God, it's a long haul. And the way that we recover better is by Australians, putting shoulder to shoulder and offering to lend a hand. So I do hope that people can find a day or a few days to go over to Halls Gap and lend a hand either with Blazeaid or with someone else. It doesn't matter, but just help these people in some way recover, because it's life-changing for them. They will never many will never really recover, but it helps a lot, an enormous amount with Australians, helping.
Yeah, we've talked about it before, haven't we? It's the fact that you help, not just turn up and say g'day and how you going and things like that. I mean, they're just the simple things of life. But I was just thinking about it because I was listening to somebody talking about Lismore and how Lismore's doing these days, and and we've been to Rochi and to Yugara, and there's all these places, like a trail of carnage around Australia, and there's still all these people, as you know, because you've still got Blazeaid camps going on here and there. And I just can't understand how governments get their priorities wrong. It seems that we spend a lot of money on what I call second tier things, and the really main things, where people in Australia, Australians, our fellow Australians, are struggling, whether they're in Rochi, I know how Rochi's doing, or Yugara, there's still people living in little lean-tos and all that sort of stuff. And why aren't we making sure that, we just seem to, our money that we pay in tax seems to go, to me, in the wrong direction mostly, and we're not spending the money. That's, as you said, people have lost their houses. I mean, let's help them.
Yeah, that's right, Macca. Look, I don't know what to say about that.
You don't have to say anything. I
know we live in a fabulous country. I know when you hear reports of what goes on in Sudan and, the Ukraine, and you just shake your head and you say, my God, aren't we lucky to live here?
Mm.
But I think what makes Australia is Australians more so than government. It's your next door neighbour, you know, who lends a hand. It's someone who turns up out of the blue with just a, you know, a high vis vest on and said, you know, let's roll up that fence.
Mm.
You know, a neighbour says, look, don't you bury those sheep. I'm going to get some mates and we'll get a backhoe and we'll bury the sheep. You look after your wife, take her out for tea. I mean, this is Australia and this is government in a lot of ways. This is the pseudo government. The real backbone of Australia is how we help each other.
Exactly.
So,
Kevin, are you starting a Blazehead camp at where?
Yeah.
At where?
Well, it's Halls Gap Recreation Reserve. Macca, I was only just typing to Lee Kelly yesterday when I was moving sheep and the word came, you know, asking for a base, you know, for a call app. And then this fabulous MP, Emma, rang me up and said, Kevin, look, what do you want? And this is all you want to hear. What do you want? And I said, I want a base for the Blazehead volunteers. We've got to have somewhere to stay, toilets, dining, showers, so that we can get those troops out and lend a hand. So, yes, it's Halls Gap Recreation Reserve. We don't know when, Macca, but I wouldn't be surprised if those country people that in a week's time will be going. But we just ask people to keep an eye on the website, blazehead.com, or Google Blazehead Current Camps, and up it will come. Phone numbers of coordinators there. But there's other camps too, Macca. I know that everyone can't get to Halls Gap to help these people after the Pomonal fires, but we've got the Daintree camp that just opened. Remember, there was a terrific cyclone up there after Tiralee. And then over in WA, I heard you talking about the heat waves. Well, we work over in the mornings there at a place called Howathara. It's hard to say. Stanthorpe in Queensland is still going. You mentioned Lismore this morning. That's still going. Nimboida, Willawarren, Maipalonga in South Australia. That took so long for those floods to go down. But yeah, they're working over there. And gone on in Victoria and bought after floods. But Macca, there's a fellow, I did send a note to you, but just, you know I hear you say from time to time, you just wonder about the people who've got money. Do they really do a lot with their money to help others? But there's a fellow called Joe Brady from Bendigo. He's got a construction company and he's got a, you know, whole pile of workers there, and I think he's got backpackers as well. But he was in between construction jobs, and while still paying them, he sent them all over to Blazehead to fix up a lot of the homes that are being flooded at Gornong.
All right.
And you know, I mean, this is a young man. He's done pretty well, but he's showing his power by helping others. I mean, it brings tears to your eyes, doesn't it? And you know, what great philanthropy. An unsung hero who's a legend. He's a bloody rock star. May there be more of them.
Yeah, exactly. We need more of that. We need more good examples, Kevin, don't we? And that's a great one. Joe Brady, eh? Okay. All right, Joe Brady, Halls Gap will start in a week or two, you reckon?
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. Look, it might even be 3 or 4 days.
All right, and you can go to the...
There's a lot of stock burnt. There's a lot of fences down. There's a lot of tiers that need, you know, drying up. But the way to dry them up is to pitch in and lend a hand. And look, by osmosis, once we're there, people come out of the woodwork and, you know, wives dob in their husbands and say, look, you know, he needs a hand. He's out there struggling in the ashes and it all happens.
I'll come down in 3 or 4 weeks when it's up down. I'll come down and say g'day too, okay?
Macca, you are a legend.
Yeah, I am a legend.
To do that means so much to so many people. Thank you.
Good on you, Kevin. Good luck, mate.
Good on you, Macca.
See you.
Bye.
My name is Brendan Privilege, says Brendan Privilege. I'm the sweep coach of an under-19 surf life-saving surfboat crew who, due to their performance and an under-23 crew pulling out, have been selected to represent WA at the Australian Surf Rowers League, that's the ASRL, Open Interstate Championships being held, even as we speak, at Lawn in Victoria this weekend. We headed off last Sunday morning from Secret Harbour, as we are from Secret Harbour Surf Life Saving Club, to drive towing the surf boat to Lawn, picked up 3 additional crew from Adelaide Airport on Monday night, then drove to Lawn before we'll head back to Perth next, probably Monday, tomorrow. Big week of driving and adventure. 2 of the crews are 17, one's 18, the other 19. So it's a great effort from these young men, says Brendan, who are all volunteer surf life savers. Their crew's name is the Secret Strokers. That's because they're from Secret Harbour. Is that right? Secret Harbour? Yeah. And they'll be contesting the under-23s and the under-23s at the ASRL Open being held on this weekend, and then with another rower who is 24, they will contest the reserve grade division of the Australian Surf Rowers League Open. Wouldn't that be great? So let's hear it for the Secret Harbour Secret Strokers. There you go. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. It's Rob here from Murrum Bateman. How are you?
Good, thanks, Bob. Rob, is it, or Bob?
Yeah, Bob or Rob, doesn't matter.
Oh, both, yeah.
No, just heading up to Gunning Show today with the float filled up with alpacas. We've got the first alpaca show of the season. So they all get shorn in September, October, November. So this is the first time when their fleeces are long enough.
Uh-huh.
So we've got 85 heading up there today.
85?
85, indeed.
What? Yeah. What sort of a float gets 85 alpacas in it?
No, I've only got 8.
Oh, right.
No, there's exhibitors coming from everywhere.
Oh, I see.
So some coming from down Sydney and on the outskirts of Sydney and all around Goulburn and Canberra and wherever. Yeah,
so what's the deal with alpacas? They're the new sheep, are they? Or?
Oh, look, they've been around 25 years, Mac, yeah. And there's probably about 400,000 in Australia.
How many?
They're really about 400,000.
Right.
Yep, so there's two types of alpacas. There's a Kaya, which are like a Merino, essentially, and Suris, which is a lot more like an Angora goat type fibre. But they're extremely soft fibre. You know, when you get an alpaca jumper, it's always very nice and soft because it doesn't have a scratch factor. It's very high comfort level. And they don't have lanolin, so no flies, no lice, which is always good. And they hate foxes, so they'll kill foxes.
Really?
And yeah, I've had 3 foxes killed on my place. I actually saw an alpaca run down and kick the absolute clappers out of this fox, and it was just, they kick them and roll them, and they hate them. Yeah, so it's a really... A lot of sheep farmers get alpacas as herd guards.
Well, would they be any good out with in dingo country too?
No, dingo. Oh, look, dingoes possibly. Dogs, no. The dogs hunt by brute force. Foxes hunt by stealth. And big alpacas, you know, 80 to 100 kilos. But if you have those wild dogs and, you know, packs of dingoes, that's probably not really their forte.
Yeah.
So, yeah, suggest they're good enough for that. Little donkeys might do a job on the dingoes, but anyway.
Yeah, donkeys are great too, aren't they? I love donkeys.
Yeah, I've got donkeys as well, so, yeah, I breed miniature donkeys as well.
So do you shear your alpacas or you breed them?
No, I breed them and then I get them shorn every year.
Uh-huh.
So I have a professional alpaca shearer come down and do the job, and so we've got a very good judge coming down. She's been an internationally accredited judge. She's judging today, so there'll be some lovely animals there. So people are not too far away from Gunning. So all those people around the ACT, it's only under an hour's drive, and it's a lovely little town.
Yeah, it is Gunning. A lovely town. Now tell me this, alpaca shearers, are they the same as sheep shearers? Is there a lot of, positive...
crossover?
Yeah.
Look, when you shear an alpaca, Macca, you've got to...
That
almost rhymes, doesn't it?
Yeah, alpaca, Macca.
Yeah,
Macca the alpaca, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, you tie them up and you stretch them up long ways. You can't push them like a sheep. So, but once you immobilise them, they're easy. You shear one side, toss them over, shear the other side. And it takes a couple of minutes, you know, for a good shearer. He'll have them done in under 3 minutes. Uh-huh. So we do about 110 a day.
And
when
is
we're
there
going.
Is there a fleece worth a lot of money? Is it comparable to wool?
Yeah, the really good fine white stuff is $35 to $40 a kilo, and we're selling it to China, England, all over the place. So we've actually got a co-op going now, and. We've had 28 tonnes being dispatched in the last month,
and they're
quite a lot of fleece.
And they're from South America somewhere? Where's their home?
That's correct, yeah, Peru.
Peru.
Yeah, essentially Peru. So about 25 years ago, a plane load of alpacas came to Australia, probably pretty average quality. And it all started from there, and people have brought some good ones in, and they've bred some even better ones, you know, over the years. So there's some very big breeders about. You know, there's a few breeders in South Australia that one's got about 1,200, another's got 2,500. So it's quite a lot of alpacas. But yeah. We sell alpaca doonas, and they're absolutely beautiful. You know, like half the weight of a wool doona, and we have the same doona winter and summer.
Well, there you go.
And we're at Murrin Bateman, so it's pretty cool there.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, your alpacas will be everywhere at Gunning today. Okay.
Absolutely, Macca. So, thanks for giving the packers a Macca welcome.
Good on you, Bob.
Okay. Cheers, buddy.
See you, mate. Bye. This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News, and firstly from Mike Wiltshire of Ockham Technology. He says, Ian, you may already know of Lizard Moleskins of Ballarat. It's a small Australian manufacturer of high-quality moleskin trousers. It's been operating for about 10 years, and I found them when I decided to try and purchase Australian products. I had previously been buying stuff from New Zealand, but their quality had slowly fallen away. Lizard is a fully integrated operation, making the fabric from Australian cotton using small and local specialist services. I recently contacted their principal, John Breen, in order to order 4 pairs, and he responded apologetically to say that a critical service doing his fabric dyeing, another Ballarat company, had just shut down permanently, and he's now searching for a replacement. I think an appeal through your program might help him, says Mike Wiltshire. Well, whatever we can do. Thank you, Mike. We all support Made in Australia. From Margaret Wick Fitzgerald, Ian, Batemans Bay is a town on the south coast of New South Wales and just down the road from Canberra, which is a favourite destination for Canberra, who have a lot of holiday houses there. In fact, they even call it Canberra by the Sea, don't they? The population of Batemans Bay is around 19,000. In holiday times and weekends, you can put another zero on that. We have a great hospital and a well-run emergency department. But Michael Holland would like to shut the ED, the emergency department, because there's a new hospital to be built in Maruya. But the reason that the community of Batemans Bay is trying to keep it open, there's been over 13,000 signatures and still growing to take it to Parliament. During the peak time, it can take up to 1.5 hours to travel the 26 Ks to Maruya. There are plans to build a bypass in the future, but it would save a lot of life to keep the Batemans Bay Hospital open. I'm just one of the permanent residents of Batemans Bay, says Margaret Wick. And from Joy Dodds, the Bush Children's Education Foundation calls annually for applications from families in isolated rural areas for assistance with scholarships and bursaries. This year's deadline is next Friday, February the 23rd, and we are looking to maximise opportunities to reward the most needy and assistance warranted. Next year will mark the 60th anniversary of BCEF, that's the Bush Children's Education Foundation, after medico and Changi prisoner of war, Dr. Charles Huxtable, returned from all that horror, joined the RFDS, based at Broken Hill, and saw the plight of isolated children in terms of education and school social interaction. It would be great, says Joy, to mark the event during the year with a reminder of Huxtable's vision and compassion. In Changi, he was revered for his medical care of needy prisoners of war, and he was doubtlessly a man of vision who then turned his vision to isolated families' needs. So that's next Friday. I reckon if you go to BCEF, that's the Bush Children's Education Foundation, and look for scholarships and bursaries, must be in by next Friday, the 23rd. I get lots of letters about wind towers, or as some call them now, wind factories. This from Oberon in New South Wales, from Deborah Houlihan. She says, we are extremely dismayed by the land grab that's happening in our district as a result of the proposed wind tower development. One of the district's most beautiful grazing properties has been sold to Forestry Corporation for planting to pine and wind towers. This block of about 2,500 acres currently has lovely belts of native trees for stock shelter. It boasts fertile soils at high altitude with reliable rainfall. It should be one of the most productive farms in the state. Alas, it is going to be covered in radiata pine trees in forests renowned for hosting noxious weeds, especially blackberry bush and serrated tussock. Oberon's pine forests are also a haven for wild pigs and an increasingly large population of feral deer. Because of the seemingly endless resources of Forestry Corporation and other pine farmers, the price of blocks like this are pitched far beyond the reach of farmers. Ordinary farmers cannot justify paying beyond what a block of land can produce. According to Deborah Houlihan, Australia cannot keep allowing pine trees to be planted for carbon credit subsidies at the expense of agriculture. Indeed, New South Wales State Forests, as they were then known, had guidelines, at least up until the 1990s, that precluded the purchase of prime agricultural land for pine plantations. I am not against renewable energy, she says, but I am against what is happening in my community. There are many more reasons why wind towers should not be built in the pine forests of Oberon, including noise pollution, diminished land values, mental health issues for neighbours, the demolition of the Memorial Avenue of trees at O'Connell as the roads are altered to transport the concrete monoliths, but the issues concerning likely fire and loss of prime farming land that I've detailed to you are being overlooked, I feel, even though they are most pertinent to our looming loss of heritage and culture. This is the All Over News. When I was a small boy, the feat of Hilary and Tenzing in climbing Mount Everest was, well, it was just one of those things that may never happen again in our lifetime. 29,000 feet or about 8,000 metres. That was the 29th of May 1953. 70 years have gone by and it's now almost de rigueur, a bit like doing Kokoda, a rite of passage for the young and adventurous, even the not so young. As I said 70 years ago, this is a report of last year on Everest. It says, triumph juxtaposes tragedy as the dust settles on the 2023 Mount Everest climbing season, with hundreds of successful summits overshadowed by a significant death toll. An estimated 600 people summited the world's highest peak, including 350 Sherpas supporting 250 clients. Records were set as well, including Kami Rita Sherpa summiting Everest for the 28th time. However, 13 climbers and Sherpas have been confirmed dead, with another four missing and presumed dead. The total would be the highest death toll in a single season on Everest. Traditional mountaineering norms that have long dictated etiquette on the mountain were also broken, with evidence of egregious littering and reports of theft at base camp. Overall, there was a bittersweet feeling among observers and dedicated media, with near daily reports of summits and records, but also rescue, frostbite, and missing climbers. More than 1,200 people attempted to reach the top of the world and put the overall success rate at 52% for clients. However, extreme weather, including storms and freezing temperatures, prevented the long lines from Hilary Step to the summit from forming. Many climbers were forced to go home early. As I mentioned before, when I'm on the road, I like to listen to past programs and get a feel for what I was doing 5 or 10 years ago. And I found this interview with Greg Mortimer from 2013. He climbed Everest in the 80s, but what he says I think is still pertinent today.
I'm speaking to Greg Mortimer, climber, explorer, adventurer. There was an article the other day in the New Yorker. I'll just read you a spasm out of it. For the Sherpas and for many Westerners who have worked alongside them over the years, getting hundreds of paying clients up to the summit, Steck, Morrow and Griffith, who are people in this story, had no business being on the Lhotse face. The Yak route, as it's sometimes called, wasn't part of their climb, and the Sherpas' work there is vital to most of the mountain's constituents. Clients, guides, porters, and the ecosystem that sprouted up around them, from the villages on the way to the base camp, to the gear companies and the media outlets that treat the Everest climbing season as their Super Bowl. Comment.
Yes.
Discuss.
Everest has become an industry. It's quite extraordinary what's happened in the last decade in particular.
And when Hilary climbed it, it was this individual feat that would never be repeated again or very rarely. And now, how many climb a year now?
In the season just gone, there was about 500 people got to the top of Everest. When Hilary and Tenzing climbed it, it was thought to be physically impossible. The medical pundits of the day said you couldn't do it because unless you had oxygen on your back, it wasn't physically possible. And now, every year, there's a long line of people as clients of commercial expeditions going to the summit from Tibet and from Nepal. And in and around that, there's an industry of, as you say, of Sherpas and tea houses and companies in their home countries that are providing the impetus for that. So it's quite extraordinary.
Why did you climb it? Why did you want to climb it? When you climbed it, when?
In 1984.
It's a long time ago, isn't it? 30 years ago.
Tim McCartney Snape and I were there were less than 200 people at that stage who'd climbed it, and I think we were the fourth and fifth people to climb it without oxygen. and now it's become quite mainstream. Look, at the same time, it's still as cold. You know, the wind still blows as hard.
And it's dangerous because people get killed, don't they?
And every year people, excuse me, are killed. It's a curious mix of elements in that way. And in the same way, Kokoda has become much more popular. And I don't mind it, actually. It's got more crowded on Everest. It's become quite unpopular in some circles. But I think for anyone to stand on top of Everest is an extraordinary thing to do, and I'd encourage everyone to do it.
What did you do when you got up there?
Well, look, we just hung around for 20 minutes and it was getting dark and we went down again. And that's what it's like. Extraordinary, but as soon as you step on top of Everest, your mind is filled with thoughts of getting down again.
I mentioned before, and that's why I asked how old Hillary was, there must be an age cut off about 30 or 35
it's
or something.
It's surprisingly older than that.
Is it?
Yeah, we think that it's mid-40s, you're probably at your peak, as a combination of experience, mental stamina as well.
What about the oxygen stamina thing? And the...
Yeah, that's okay, but up into your mid-40s, you're well-placed in that way. Look, going above 8,000 metres is like being on another planet. Most of the problem is a mental one. As we get more and more cotton, more and more virtual, if you like, it becomes more important, I think.
Yeah.
The real things are more important.
Tell me about Antarctica. And you going down to Antarctica, or you've been many times?
Yeah,
you?
I've spent every summer in Antarctica since 1990. There's some big obstacles in the way. The mouth of Commonwealth Bay, which is where Mawson's huts are, is now guarded by an iceberg about 78 kilometres long, which is stuck there. This iceberg broke off the Mertz Glacier nearby and then got grounded in about 250 metres depth of water. It's so big. And it's just stuck there and the ice is built up behind it.
You've been there to Mawson's Hut? To
walk a number of times.
To walk inside that and see the cans of food and all that
stuff. It's one of life's great experiences, particularly for an Australian. It's an extraordinary, extraordinary experience. It's like a time machine because the shutters are still on the doors and windows, and so it's very strange, sepia-like light inside. And it's just like a frozen time capsule in there. You know, Mawson's rocking chair is still in his room, and the stove is just emerging out of the ice.
I met this bloke who was an Antarctician. You'd be described as an Antarctician too, I suppose.
I'd like to think that, yeah. Yeah,
and he said something about this was where the wind stops or the wind starts or something at Commonwealth.
The wind starts.
The world's wind starts or something. Must be an awful place to, if that wind's blowing
it's
every day.
It's amazing to see it.
Greg Moore, what do you do on Sundays? Play with your lambs now?
I listen to you, Mac.
Yeah, apart from that, go climbing still?
Yeah, one or two days a week.
You wouldn't attempt Everest again. You've done it. Why do it again? You don't do it twice, do you? Or people do it again, do they?
Yeah, they do. They go back time and time again. And Sherpas in particular.
Finding different ways to get up.
Yeah.
Nice little places to climb in. Like, do you go and climb in the Grampians or those sort of things?
There's a lot of very, very good rock, high-quality, world-class rock climbing in Australia. Mm. The Grampians are some of those. Mount Arapiles near Horsham, one of the world's great places. The Blue Mountains are.
Yeah.
The Warrumbungles, the Flinders Ranges. We're graced with very good rock climbing.
Guess who's in my studio? Bob the Kelpie's here. Donnie Spencer, how are you, mate?
Oh, I'm great. Thanks, Macca.
Good to see you.
It's great to see you too, buddy.
Your Kenny Rosewell song's on high rotation here.
Yeah, I know, right? Thank you.
It's a great little song. Great little song.
Well, he was a great little tennis player.
wasn't he a trooper?
Yeah.
I went to Cogra High School.
Right.
And when Kenny went there, it was Cogra Intermediate High School.
Yeah.
And he was when I went there, the schools were, you know, your schools were Bass, Flinders, Phillip and Tench. And I think some time ago, they changed them all. So now one of the schools is Rosewell. I think one of the others is O'Neill after Normie O'Neill. And
really?
I think one's called Chapman after Gary Chapman, who was a swimmer. So they've changed the names, which I think's not a good idea because it changes your school and you remember. We're in Bass or we're in... Kenny was a great
wonderful,
player
and a
nice bloke, yeah.
Oh, lovely bloke,
yeah.
Lovely bloke. He's a good friend of mine, yeah.
Yeah.
And that song is word for word true.
Yeah, you just turned up and there he was.
He
was your partner.
After being my childhood hero, although he's only a couple of years older than I am really, but to actually... finally meet him and play tennis with him. It was a ridiculous story for a country boy growing up there listening on the radio.
Yeah, and apparently it was his backhand. He had this, people just said he had this backhand that was like no other.
Yeah, it was like no other. And I don't know the thing is, you know, they say now that Djokovic is the best player because he's won 24 majors. Mm. Ken won 8 majors, turned professional, and missed 44 majors, 11 years of tennis because the pros weren't allowed to play. And then when he came back, 39 years old, he got into the final of Wimbledon and the final of the American Open and got beaten by Jimmy Connors, 20 years younger in both. So how many majors may Ken have won?
And the games, you know, it seemed now, when I saw Pete Sampras play, I thought, he's a giant. They're giants. And Kenny was a little diminutive little fellow, wasn't he?
It's absolutely.
A different game, really. Different huge blokes and huge
rackets.
Girls and the rackets and all that. So
everything, all the
technology. I think the thing is to be, if you're the best of your generation, well, you're the best of your generation.
That's all it can be. It doesn't matter what sport.
No, you can't compare.
If you're the best in the world at that time, you can't suddenly say 40 years later that somebody's better.
Or one of the best. I mean, there was a whole lot of lovely players, wasn't there? Oh. Kenny Hode and Rod Laver and that other Queensland. Well, Anderson Cooper. Tennis players were falling out of trees here, weren't they?
We were the best in the world in those days.
Roy Emerson, I was trying to think of Roy. Yeah, what a great player.
Wonderful.
So there you go. Well, it's a wonderful thing to have done to write that. We used to see Kenny sometimes at a little fish and chip shop here, which I think is closed at the moment. I don't know. But anyway, we'd worn in there, and here's Kenny sitting with... what was his wife's name?
Wilma.
Wilma, that's right. Yeah, yes. Eating there, having fish and chips. So we'd say good day and all that sort of stuff. What have you been doing with yourself? You're with the ACMF, the Australian Children's Music Foundation, aren't you? You started that. And
I started it. 22 years now, mate.
Wow, and you're taking music to isolated schools, all sorts of schools, I suppose, isn't it?
We take music to disadvantaged kids all over Australia and provide free lessons and free instrument, but permanent lessons, and we work in music therapy in the Children's Hospital in Melbourne Children's Hospital and Sydney, and we're juvenile justice centres, and we have a national song competition for get the kids to be creative. So,
music's a thing, isn't it? I mean, they talk about you're going to nursing homes and old people's homes, and it just their eyes light up. They're just sitting there like comatose, and then a bit of music, and all of a sudden.
Yes.
Their eyes light up and they just become different people, and it's a lesson for all of us, really.
It is, actually. It makes you realise just how much music is a part of us because, as you say, there are people there who maybe, got Alzheimer's or dementia and yet play them a song, they'll remember every word of the song.
Yeah.
And they play. They remember how to play. It's amazing. You know? Yeah.
Well, Donnie Burrows was like that. Lovely Donnie Burrows.
Oh, of course, I knew him well. I worked with him a few times. Yeah. And George Goller, who was always with him.
Yeah, and Donnie, in his later years, had dementia and he was in a place.
Yes, that's right.
But his friend Kevin Hunt, a piano player.
Yes.
And Kevin would go out there and take the piano and play, and then all of a sudden Donnie had...
Yep.
He was a different man. He was... must be a different brain connections and things like that with music. Wonderful thing. And obviously, if it's like that for recognition, must be also good for therapy. A lady was talking to me last week about horses, and she said when you get into near to a horse in terms of like about 50 feet or something around a horse, there's a sort of a force field, and they've done tests to say that it makes you calmer and things like that, and music.
Yes.
Obviously has the same sort of effect, not just for older people, but kids and littlies. Well, you must see it with ACMF.
Absolutely. It's incredible what it does for kids. And, we deal with kids in disaster areas, after bushfires and that. One, remember years ago, I came on your program 15 years ago and when there was a serious drought, and I talked about looking after kids who were suffering trauma, and we're still in that school, mate.
Yeah. So now you've been writing songs. You're still writing songs, I suppose.
Oh yeah, I've never stopped.
Why don't they
writing
do a,
songs?
I was just the other somebody said to me the other day, a lady here at the ABC has since left. She said, "Maka, why don't you do a dog show? Because the only things that have got any traction on television these days is just is dog shows. People like dog shows. They should do a show called Bob the Kelpie, shouldn't they? They should do."
That'd be good.
You wrote that how long ago?
Oh, mate,
30
years ago at least. Yeah. 80, yeah, maybe a bit more.
Yeah.
They don't write songs like that anymore.
No, they don't write songs like that anymore. I mentioned before there was the Surf Life's, the Surf Rowers meeting in Lawn. Well, they're not meeting, they're competing. And on the line's Brendan Privilege. G'day, Brendan.
G'day, Macca. How are you?
Oh, mate, I'm great. It's nice to talk to you, mate. I read your little email before, earlier this morning, about your trip. You're with the secret paddlers. Is that what they're called, the secret paddlers?
Secret Harbour, Secret Strokers.
Secret Strokers. And yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Brendan and his young blokes have driven from all the way from Secret Harbour in Perth to Lawn. I can hear the announcements in the background because it's a big deal over there today, isn't it, mate? There's, I suppose, the finals. Now, how have the Secret Strokers gone?
We just had our quarter final and unfortunately came fifth. So we needed a fourth in order to be able to progress through to the semi. So our campaign's over, but we've had an absolute wonderful time over here. And the young guys, you know, two of them are only 17, so they've had a really life-changing sort of experience with the conditions over here and the experience that they've had. So, yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, so you did that so long and towed your boat as well. So that's a big deal. What's the surf life? Because that's the whole thing with all surfing, but certainly with the boats, the catching the wave is the difference between winning and losing, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely, as we just found out. So the surf has been good. It's dropped off this morning, though, unfortunately. It has been sort of up to about 2 metres at times, which is fantastic and good fun. But, yeah, today it's dropped off to probably only about half a metre to a metre at times.
Yeah, so, Brendan, you just decided this would be a good idea to drive from Western Australia with these young blokes. That would be a great experience, and towed your boat. And I suppose, is that the end of your day now, or do you go home tomorrow or what?
Yes, so we're leaving tomorrow morning, about 5 o'clock tomorrow morning, going via Adelaide, dropping four at the airport so they can get the plane home, and then two of us are driving all the way back to Perth.
But, look, I think it'd be wonderful. I was trying to get down to Lawn, actually, to see, because a lot of people, a lot of boats there, a lot of rowers, a lot of clubs from all over, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the Australian Surf Rowers League Open, and there's over 330 crews have entered, so it's a huge event. It's fantastic. And shame you couldn't make it down here. It's quite a spectacle actually, with the waves and all the boats and everything.
Yeah, I'd love to be there. And so is this does this happen every year in different places, does it?
Yes. So last year it was at Wollongong, this year Lawn. We're not sure where it'll be next year, but yeah, it changes every year, so we all get to travel around. And it's a good market to see how you're going before the Australian Surf Life Saving Championships, which is generally sort of 8 to 10 weeks' time after this event.
Yeah, and I spoke to some blokes from Lawn during the week because I was chasing up to see if I could get down there. But next year, I don't know if you'll be there, Brendan, or your boys, but I suppose if you said they're 17 and 18-year-old, great experience for them, and they'll learn and be even better.
Yes, exactly right. Yeah, it's really good, invaluable experience for them.
Yeah, somebody said something like there's no stories like old rowers have, you know.
Absolutely.
Blokes have been rowing surf boats all their lives. It's when you see some of the waves and some of the things and some of the carnage that goes on. It's wonderful. It's you know, people talk about Australian culture. I reckon that's a greatest Australian culture. I don't know if anybody in the world does it like we do, and on the beaches and it's and rowers. I remember I was at the Masters rowing, which is not surf, but I spoke to these two older blokes. They were brothers, and I think they rowed from Newcastle. They're up there, but they always wanted to be flatwater rowers, but they ended up most of their life they had a great story, a lovely story about rowers, and I suppose they can fit seamlessly, can't they, from one to the other?
Yes, generally they can. There's a little bit of difference between flatwater rowing and surf rowing. It's the shape of the hull of the boats and those sorts of things. They're heavier and everything, but yeah, other than that, sort of the technique and everything is pretty similar.
Well, Brendan, great to talk to you, mate. And thanks for ringing us this morning. I know you've been busy, but I'll catch up with you at Secret Harbour. We'll come over to the West this year and we'll catch up. Yeah. We'll come down to Secret Harbour and say good day.
Yeah, fantastic. That'd be great, Macca.
Good on you, mate. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, mate.
See ya.
Cheers.
Christabel's in Bairnsdale. Morning, Christabel.
Good morning. How are we going there?
Yeah, good. What's happening?
Yeah. Well, I'm ringing because Don Spencer is like one of my heroes. All of my children grew up learning their times tables from the best rendition ever. And now my grandchildren are learning their times table from courtesy of Don Spencer. So I'm saying thank you so much.
There you are, Donnie.
That's lovely. Yeah.
See, we were talking about maths last week and how, you know, if you don't get the right, we had Mick Pawley in. Mick Pawley's a cricketer, mm-hmm. but he's also a maths teacher. And he said, look, it starts in kindergarten and primary school. If they don't learn the basics there, they keep failing maths the rest of their
exactly,
life.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so what was the deal with that, Donnie?
Well, you know, it was simple as the fact that they announced that they weren't teaching the times table by rote or anything anymore.
Years ago. 10, yeah. 5, 3, 15. I still remember them. Yeah, I was an ace, yeah. Did you sing them?
I put it to music.
Sing something.
It's brilliant.
Sing the six times.
Oh,
go on.
I can't remember them all.
Well,
sing the
one
seven's
of them.
The best.
Seven's the best. Go on. You sing it, yes. Christabel.
You sing it to okay. me, please, love.
Here we go, Christabel.
You sing it to me and I'll sing it with you.
Okay. 1 7 is 7. 2 7s are 14, 3 7s are 21, 4 7s are 28. Oh, my children are
5 7s are 35, 6, 6. They're right. Let's go.
That's it. Oh, brilliant. It's just brilliant.
Oh, look, I have to make one confession.
Yeah.
Yes.
I wrote all the melodies, but I didn't write the words.
Oh, no.
I can't claim to have written the lyrics, but you know what? I actually, honestly, had about 40 albums out. That's one of the best-selling albums ever done.
Mm. It's hard to get now.
And I've had maths professors
maybe
get in touch with me.
Maybe they
said,
should bring it back because that's obviously
absolutely.
Yeah. Something's missing somewhere, isn't it, in maths teaching and you've got to get the basics.
Absolutely.
And there's nothing wrong with
it. I did an album about Fun with Numbers too, which was all mm-hmm. about multiplications and all numbers, whether it's telling the time or numbers, seconds in a minute and all that sort of stuff.
Well, should do it. I mean, this, yeah. you got to make kids more. Because Mike Pawley said many Australians are just completely useless when it comes to numeracy. They're hopeless.
They are now. Yeah, absolutely.
And not just kids. I mean, because they've been through a school system where,
yep.
I don't know.
Yep.
So you sing a song, you know.
It's foundational.
Sing, yeah, it is. Look, it's like learning a poem. And boom, boom, boom. That's what we used to do. 5 1s.
That's
five,
how the good.
10 1s. Yeah. 10. All that sort of stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Christabel, what's happening in Bairnsdale that we should know about?
Oh, we've had a very exciting week here in Bairnsdale because we had that storm come through that was just like, oh, 140k winds and it just crushed the centre of town. So we had a lot of trees, just some of the big ones uprooted by the roots.
Yeah, I saw one of those. Oh. Yeah, just straight out of the ground. Yeah,
it was quite terrifying. And one of my kids was working down the street at the time, and I had to go pick her up at night. And it was surreal. It was like a apocalyptic. It was like trees everywhere. The road was like
a river.
One of those shredders had just vomited leaves and branches all over the street. It was incredible. And you're just dodging things, trying to pick up a kid and get home safely. And then no power, and everyone's throwing food out. And
have you got power? You got power now.
Yes, I do now. I was out for over 24 hours. I don't know. I don't know when it all went off and came back on, of course, because I've learned everything. My house is electric. So I was like, oh, God. I lost track of time.
Yeah, exactly.
We lost comms and, yeah, it was very isolating too.
It's just, it makes you, doesn't it? Weather events always make you feel how small and insignificant you are in terms of, you know, it's there's a greater power going on somewhere, you know, and just you.
Absolutely.
Know. Christabel, 717. Nice, good to talk to you. You made Don smile.
Thanks, Don. It's awesome.
Hey, thank you very much.
Good on you.
Have a good one. Cheers.
See you, Christabel. Bye. Care. I met this bloke the other day. I'm talking to Ian Schultz. How are you, Ian?
Yeah, really good, thanks.
Ian's surrounded by bits of sawn timber and sawing machines, some lovely old hard, well, I assume they're hardwood logs,
yeah,
are they, Ian?
That's a bit of grey box, that one that we're looking at there now. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, good old pieces of wood, yeah.
And tell me your story, Ian.
All right, so I work for a company that manufactures portable sawmills. We travel up and down the east coast of Australia doing field days and shows for them, demonstrating the machines. These machines are all made locally here in Australia. They're an Australian-made sawmill that travels all around the world. We export them everywhere. Lucas Portable Mills.
Where's this taken you?
Oh, this thing's taken me into a lot of places. It's taken me across to lots of Africa, over to Norway, America, all that sort of stuff. And locally here in Australia, we travel, furthest I've been would be up to Weipa on the Queensland area, and then out to Ramangini and Maningrida. All that sort of stuff up through Armenland. But mainly I'm just employed. I travel up and down the east coast doing field days for them in places like Henty and Gunnedah and Toowoomba and shows locally. Yeah,
you like it?
Yeah, enjoy it. I've been doing it for them now. We're trying to work that out the other day. I think I've been doing this for them 18 years now. I still enjoy getting out and talking to different people every day.
And do people like to have their own sawmill at home? Or?
Yeah, we do. It's surprising how many of these units we sell in a year. People usually surprises them. We're looking at a quiet year this year, but the last couple of years we've been averaging about 1,000 units a year. That's worldwide, of course. It's not just here in Australia. We sell to a lot of different people. There's owner builders, there's arborist builders, there's people that just want to get out there and cut timber for other people and make a living out of them doing that, and they're doing quite well out of it. Yeah,
there's something nice about the smell of sawn wood, especially Australian hardwoods.
Yes. Oh, you can't beat the smell of it. You can't walk past without stopping to have a look. Most people will always stop and ask me, what species is that? And it's probably the most common question I get at a field day is, hey, mate, what species is that?
And where do you get your logs from? You're here in Cobargo. So.
Yes. So most of my logs, I don't bring the logs with me. I talk to people that have got our sawmills, and they're usually more than happy to supply a couple of logs for us. So these have come out of private property about 18 kilometres from here.
And mostly grey box, are they?
Grey box and a bit of monkey gum is what I've got sitting here this time.
What's around. Monkey gum?
It's a local gum that they just call monkey gum. It's not a bad piece of timber. It's no good in the ground, but once you start using it for framing and that sort of stuff, it's okay.
It's okay. Where's home, Ian?
For me, northeast Victoria, Wangaratta is where I come from.
When you're there?
When I'm there. That's it.
Nice to talk to you, mate. Good on you.
It's been a pleasure.
Hello, Macca.
Yeah.
This is Maurie Stack from Taree.
Hi, Maurie.
I was listening to Don Spencer this morning, Macca, and I just wanted to say that his ACMF, the Australian Children's Music Foundation, runs its program in 5 of our schools here in Taree, and it's been remarkably successful.
Well, that's good. And you've had some problems in Taree, haven't you, of recent times?
Sure. We were the first ones affected by those fires back in 2019, and then we had the floods in 2021, and then everything else that the whole country has suffered.
Yeah, I'll say. Yeah, well, I've had a lot of emails about Don, especially about his times table stuff. His kids, what a great idea.
kids just respond to his music, Macca. It's a universal appeal, and his program involves getting professional musicians going into schools and just engaging with schools with kids. They get them playing the tom-toms and just learning that you can not only appreciate music by listening to it, but you can create music. It's a wonderful program.
Yeah, and Maury, what do you do?
I'm a lawyer and a Rotarian. I seem to be more a Rotarian these days as I've got on in years, Macca.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Is there lots of work to do on the law? Has the law been changed by AI?
Yeah, it's amazing. You can go on to one of those AI sites and say, you know, give me a commercial lease, and it'll pop up a commercial lease. It's just incredible what the potential is for that AI.
Yeah, what does that mean for lawyers and solicitors and things like that? Does that mean they have less work, or?
I think we can probably use AI to just become more efficient, to have work that, you know, used to take 10 hours, maybe able to be done in half an hour, and enable us to become more efficient and pass on cost savings to clients, hopefully.
I was thinking, I was going to ask you how things are in Taree, because I was mentioning the other day about towns that are bypassed. Taree's been bypassed for a good while, and there's Kempsey, and then there's places in Victoria. They all got passed by the Hume Freeway, and they seem to be doing well, and I suppose they're used to it, but I'm sure some do better than others, and I'm not sure. Because I always think that country towns and cities, I mean, Taree was a city, not really, it's quite bigger it was at one stage. I think they're an important part of our fabric, and when you bypass them, you think, oh, well, that's good, there's no traffic and less traffic. But I think, you know, you lose something, you know, something's lost and something's gained by a bypass.
Yeah, well,
that's
Macca, there was a lot of controversy here when the bypass was proposed for Taree. But as it turned out, it was a great thing. You know, instead of having trucks rumbling through the main street, we no longer have that. The only businesses that actually lost by the bypass was, you know, a couple of service stations, which of course lost their trade.
Mm.
But even motels at the end of 12 months were doing as well as before, because people would come into town and like to stay in those motels because they were quieter, because they didn't have the traffic much going through.
Oh, I suppose so. Well, yeah, as I say, I'm just interested because I know some places are, you know, are like a ghost town compared to what they were, you know, and I can think of lots of towns, but it'd be interesting to compare. How long since Taree's been bypassed? How long ago was that?
Oh, probably 30 years.
30 years. So, yeah.
Yeah, back a long way, a fair bit, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, well,
there was great, as I said, yeah, there was great concern about it, but it was a good thing. It was the best thing could have happened for our area.
Yeah, well, it's certainly, but I'm not sure there's as much business there, do you know what I mean, as there used to be in all of those towns, you know what I mean?
Taree's done pretty well because we're close to a lot of beach areas. We've got Foster, Tuncurry. We've got Old Bar, we've got
the river.
Halliday's, we've got the wonderful river system. Do you know there's 300 kilometres of navigable waterways in the Manning Valley?
No, I didn't know that, Murray.
300, because we're the only double delta river system in Australia, so it's a magnificent waterway, and I think that's been a great thing for this area.
Yeah, well, Donnie Spencer, it's just opened a Pandora's box. There's lots of letters here about Donnie Spencer. My niece purchased his cassettes, says Sheila, many years ago for her daughter when she went to school. The baby was always there as they played. Guess what? Brilliant at mathematics. So I think because everybody talks about school and, you know, people have problems with maths, but shouldn't have it with mathematics. It's almost rote learning stuff, isn't it? And I think, I never heard Don's mathematics song, 7 1 is a 7 or whatever it was, but just seems like a no-brainer because apparently kids at school are having problems with reading and writing and also mathematics, you know.
Don always says, and it's clearly true, that there's a great connection between mathematics and music. Music's very mathematical in its the way it's set up, and you find people who are good at mathematics tend to be good at music too. It's a real connection between the two.
Yeah, well, you sing harmony in thirds and fifths and all that sort of stuff, and sometimes fourths. And you know, when I'm playing, I think, oh, gee, well, it is. It's very mathematical. You know, you're playing a keyboard or something like that, or a guitar, and you're exactly right. Murray, it's nice to talk to you, mate.
Nice to talk to you too, Macca.
Good
program.
Thank you.
Oh, this is Maggie from East Brighton. I want to talk about my uncle, Doug Shelley, who was on the Corvette HMAS Warrnambool during the bombing of Darwin. And Doug organised to rescue a wounded and dead, of course. And after the war, he was awarded a rare British Empire Medal, which my cousin Alex, who lives in Mollymook now, went up to Government House here in Victoria with her mother to receive the medal. And later on, he had been on the Sydney prior to being on the Warrnambool.
All right.
And prior to that, had been in, involved in the sinking of Italian, I can't remember the name of the ship now, in the Mediterranean. But he then read after the bombing of Darwin, the Argus, which was another newspaper here in Melbourne in those days, published a beautiful comic strip showing my uncle, very handsome man, all that he did. Unfortunately, I can't find my copy just now, my mother had. But then he, after the bombing of Darwin, he rejoined the Sydney and came ashore for shore leave here in Melbourne. And, of course, after it left Melbourne, it was bombed.
Dear oh dear, yes.
So, but he was a wonderful man. He died very young, 46. Mm. But we were all very proud of him. And I loved that song, When the Bombs Rained Down on Darwin.
Yeah.
Because when Uncle Doug came back to my grandmother's house in Middle Park, we were all sitting around, you know, the family, kids, everybody. And he was telling us about it all. And he said, the Japs were flying so low, we could have hit them with potatoes. And I was about five or six.
And that's what Donnie Spencer was alluding to, Australia's sense of humour. I hope we never lose that. I hope we never lose that, Maggie. How's things in East Brighton, Maggie?
Oh, fabulous. It's quite overcast this morning, but very pleasant. I'm hopping off soon. But let me finish the we could have hit them with potatoes. And me, five or six, said, well, why didn't you? Anyhow, look, long and short, how can I get a copy of that song?
I don't know. We've got no details at the moment. I don't think it's even been released yet, has it, Kel? But we'll get in touch. We've got your phone number, haven't we? We'll get back to you.
Yes,
and let you know as soon as.
All right, lovely. Thank you. Bye for now.
Just hold on, Maggie. Who sings the song, Kel? When the Bombs Rain Down on Darwin? Gary Luck is the name of the bloke who sings
Gary
it.
Luck. Okay. Gary is it Luck. That double R? Just R Y? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That's Google. Right. Google Gary Luck.
I will.
Go onto the Google, Maggie.
Oh, I'm on it all the time, Maggie. Don't worry. Hey, and by the way, Dr. Middleton in Deniliquin delivered me 85 years ago, Graham Middleton's son, father.
There you go.
It's all aroundabouts, isn't it? Yeah. All right. Thanks for that. Bye.
Good on you, Maggie. Bye.
Bye for now.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.